Yoga means union. Yoga means union. All of these methods, karma yoga, the yoga of daily life, bhakti yoga, the yoga of love and devotion, Gyan yoga, the yoga of the intellect going to it through itself, the mind going beyond itself. Hatha yoga, the yoga of the body, sun and moon. All of these yogas end up with union. Same place. They all go to the same place. Every yoga goes to the same place. Each person finds the yoga that is suitable to him. Raja yoga, the yoga that I pursue, is peculiarly unique to my particular trip. It's not for many other people. It includes, Ashtanga yoga includes eight limbs. Eight limbs. The first two limbs are purification. Each of them includes five little things. The first one includes non-killing, non-stealing, non-lying, non-giving and receiving of gifts, and brahmachari, or sexual continence. Not many people want to go on that trip in the West. I mean, we just got sexual freedom, man. We're not about to go on that trip. The second, called niyama, includes cleanliness, tapas or austerities, study, surrender, and contentment. The third limb involves asanas, or getting your seat, or hatha yoga, or getting your nerves opened and your body calm so you can turn it off and leave it. The fourth is called pranayama, which is breath control, or control of prana through breath. And the fifth through the eighth are techniques of calming the mind. Desire is the trap. Desire is the attachment to your senses and to your thinking mind. Wow, think of that. Who made that noise? What's happening now? Gee, that memory, that plan. Wow, and your mind, Vivekananda says, our minds are like a drunken monkey. And he says, it's like a monkey that's been fed the wine of desire and bitten by the scorpion of jealousy. And it's full of pride, and it's just rushing madly around. Now, 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 this thought, this thought, this thought. So you want to get rid of it? You just sit down. Do like the Southern Buddhists do. You sit down and you find that place right here in your abdomen where every time you breathe in, it goes up, and every time you breathe in and out, it goes down. In, out, in, out, in, out. And every time it goes up, you say rising. And every time it goes down, you say falling. Into yourself. Rising. Fall. Rising, fall. Rising, fall. Rising, fall. Sit down sometime and do that for 3 hours. If you went to Ceylon and you went all the way to Ceylon to become an enlightened being and you went into a monastery, put you in a little room and they'd say, notice this place in your abdomen that goes up and down. Every time it goes up, you think rising. Every time it goes down, you think falling. You understand? You say yes. They say, thank you. And they walk out. 2 weeks later, they come back. Say, how you doing? Well, what was I supposed to do? Didn't you hear my instructions? Rising. Well, was that all? I did that for a few minutes. No, keep on doing it. Well, I can't spend all my time. I've got more important things to do. What? Well, I've got things to think about. What? Well, I mean, the day is beautiful. I want to enjoy. Oh, well, go ahead. And when you finish, come on back. We have eternity. There's no rush. The Hindus say a prerequisite for this trip is what they call virag. Virag means non-attachment. It means non-worldly attachment to worldly things. I mean, first I had a motorcycle and it was a groove to drive on Skyline Boulevard at 90 miles an hour in the fog at night and do hill climbing and all kinds of things like that. And then I got to the point where the motorcycle sat in the garage. Virag. I was in effect done with motorcycles. How many things have you been done with? We all have a whole lifetime of virag, of the onset of non-worldliness, the finish with worldliness. You can look and you can see exactly where you are on the trip. How far along are you? Because everything that's still holding you, everything that's keeping you as attached, doesn't mean what you do. It means where your attachments are. At one point I said to my teacher, what is LSD? He thought about it for 2 weeks. And he wrote me a note, which is the following note. He said, LSD is like a Christ in America, which is awakening the young folk in Kali Yuga. That's the dark age. America is a most materialistic country. Therefore, God has shown his avatar in a form of LSD, a material. They wanted a material for approaching God, and they got it in the form of LSD. A man who has not tasted things thinking as true, how he will get the feeling of these things? How do I interpret that? Interpretation is that the psychedelics show us the possibility. But just as in Christ's parable of the wedding feast, if you try to go to the wedding without the wedding garment on, you get bound hand and foot and cast into outer darkness, and there's much crying and gnashing of teeth. And man, I've been cast in outer darkness so many times. And what is the wedding garment? The wedding garment is the purification. And what is the purification? The purification is non-attachment. It's like when Mahatma Gandhi gets shot, he doesn't sit and say, at his last moment, he doesn't say, who shot me, or you shot me, or I forgive you, or here we go, or save the Union, or anything. He says, Ram. Boom. He says the name of God, and he goes out. He just goes towards the light. No attachment. He's not holding on to life. Not holding on to life. You can only love life when you can love death. When there is no fear. When there is no fear. The fear of death is the prime motivating force in this country at this moment. A realized being would say, one to me is fame and shame. One to me is loss and gain. One to me is pleasure and pain. Can you say that? No? Who is that that says no? Me. Who's that? Well, I don't like pain. Who doesn't like pain? I don't. Who's that? Who is that? Who is that? Is that who you are? That's the illusion. That's the illusion. That's what keeps you stuck in the place. That's what brings you down. It's that set of definitions. And finally, when you see how it is, the only thing to do is to start to calm the mind down and center it and watch your own desires go by. The terrible beauty of nature. How poignant it all is. How beautiful a Divine Mother is. She's everything. She creates and she destroys. She creates and she destroys. Ramakrishna had a vision. He saw a woman of exquisite beauty ascend from the Ganga, from the Ganges, and slowly approach the Panchavati, the place he was staying. Presently, he noticed she was about to be a mother. In a short time, she gave birth to a lovely child and was nursing the babe with utmost tenderness. A moment later, he observed she was no longer tender, but had assumed a terrible aspect. She put the child between her jaws and crushed it to pieces. Swallowing it again, she hid herself in the Ganges. I had been meditating in a little house in Gorda, in Big Sur, and there was a cat that went with the house, and I'd be sitting in meditation, and the cat would bring in a mouse or a rabbit that had just killed, or was in the process of killing, and it would bring it to me as a gift. And I would be being very holy, and this cat would sit next to me, crunching on the skull of this animal. And the only thing that was available to me was the emotion of infinite and unbearable compassion. And what is compassion? Compassion is a total empathy with how it all is. Because when you are all of it, you are the mouse's skull, and you are the cat crunching it, and you are the you that is horrified by it, and you are the whole business. And that too, and that too, and that too. And you've got to examine all of the dramas you're involved in, all of your patent place, to see where you are caught in the melodrama, because if the other thing besides time you've got to get out of is subject-object, you realize that any time you think of another human being as him, or her, or them, you are perpetuating the illusion which is keeping you down. And the next statement that is also true is, the only thing we have to offer to another human being is our being, is our state of being. If I protest against war angrily, don't you see? I am creating the very thing I'm trying to get rid of. That it is only when one is free of attachment that one can make a statement that does not create its polar opposite. Because if somebody comes up to me and treats me like him, I can get caught in their head and I'll start to feel like him. And then if I'm him, they're him to me. And then the polarization gets more and more and more extreme. Take it in lovemaking. There are three levels at which a man and a woman can relate to one another. There is the relation between John and Mary, personalities. There is the relation of yin and yang, polarities, energy poles. In both of those, the word lust is appropriate. That is, you are turned on by the other person as object, as them. And then, through the method, you get to the place where we are us, briefly. There is still another method. And that is to establish with another human being the place of us. And calm down and calm down until we are here and there is one consciousness and two bodies, and then the two bodies do the dance of nature, which is what they are, and through that dance they create energy which we draw up to keep us right in this place of unity. And once you are in this place of unity, to, quote, make love in the old-fashioned head models of subject-object brings you down. Brings you down. It's as simple as that. And you're just not going to settle for it, finally. You've got to understand what desire creates the universe means. You create all, a peaceful man lives in a peaceful universe. This is not hiding one's head in the sand. This is the only leverage one has on the prawn of the universe, on the illusion. If I stop at a gas station, the guy is wiping my windshield. Who is the guy? He is God and I am God. You see, we in the West have been educated for so long about individual differences. Taller, shorter, richer, poorer, older, younger, them, us, establishment, hippies, dropouts, drop-ins. Man, we got it coming out of our ears. So many discriminations. Behind all those discriminations, here we are. The minute you do the flip over so that the figure becomes ground and the ground becomes figure, everybody you look at is the same person. I mean, if I know Sam, I know Sam whether Sam's wearing a blue shirt or a green shirt, don't I? And I can still discriminate blue shirts and green shirts, but I don't confuse Sam in the blue shirt with Sam in the green shirt. I don't think they're two different people. I know Sam. Well, the fact is, here we all are, and we are all God. Now, what are we going to do about it? If we all knew who we were, there would be in this room at this moment one consciousness and all these manifestations. That's why I said at the beginning, if you think you're listening, you're in the wrong place. It's like, I know I'm not talking. I do a mantra called Aditya Hridayam Punyam Sav Shatru Binashanam. Aditya Hridayam Punyam Sav Shatru Binashanam. All evil vanishes from life for him who keeps the sun in his heart. And I think of the sun warms. It doesn't say, I'll warm you because you're good. I won't warm the bad guys. It doesn't say, I'll only warm you if you'll pay me. It is light. It is consciousness. It is warmth. Surya Atman Jagkasta Sischa. Surya, the sun is the Atman, is the God of the physical universe. It is light, it is consciousness, it is energy. Be like the sun. Just go around warming things. So you will say, well, I can't warm him, man. He thinks he's like the fuzz, or he thinks he's object, or he thinks he's a bad guy. That's his head. That's his desire. You create your universe. My teacher writes on his slate, if you wear shoe leather, the whole earth is covered with leather. And he says, if you think on God, the whole world is God. If somebody, quote, brings you down, quote, brings you down, that brings me down, understand that that is your head. You are creating your universe. Got to come back there all the time. You want to help somebody? Help yourself. That's a scary one. I mean, don't we help people? You don't help people if you think you're helping them. How do you like that one? That's what the non-giving and receiving of gifts is about. Because as long as you think you're giving me something, forget it. Because neither of us can afford it. Because all it's doing is creating a subject-object relationship between us. That's why America gives away all this stuff and everybody hates her. She's saying, look what I'm giving you. See, if the mentality of America was, look, God gave us all this wheat. We got more than we need. You need it. It's our mouth. It's Biafra is our mouth and this is our wheat. Here, have it. You use it now. Then there's no giving and there's no receiving. Then it's all cool. It's all cool. Because anything, just like lying and stealing, these are all the same things. They all create subject-object. By passion for the peers of opposites, by those twain snares of like and dislike, Prince, all creatures live bewildered, save some few, who quit of sins, holy in act, informed, freed from opposites, and fixed in faith, cleave unto me, says Krishna in the Gita. You've got to finish with opposites. You've got to get finished with opposites. We and them is a state of mind. If you don't like living in that state, change your mind. Somebody else says, but there are we and them. That's his mind. You live in your mind. Because I'll tell you another secret. The most ferocious sheriff's deputy in the southern small town, the fiercest North Vietnamese, the toughest guy in the FBI, the hardest meth head, all want to be God. And they all want to be the sun, and they all want to be love, and they all want to be warm. See, all you got to do is tap in on the universal place and all the rest of it. I came back from India and I found my father, who was a 70-something-year-old man who was busy getting ready to die. He had lost his wife. He was depressed. His whole life, he felt, had been a failure. As you know, it's the whole syndrome of that place you get in life. He was looking back in the past, and I came back, and he picked me up at the airport, and he took one look at this Meshuggah kid, you know, with the beard and the dress and the whole business, and he didn't even know how to deal with it. And he came and he started talking about making his will, and it was all over for him. And all I saw was this very, all I felt was this compassion, like the mouse eating the cat eating the mouse. And I heard all the drama, but I didn't climb into that particular melodrama. I just kept centering and kept centering, and that's hard with your father because you've got years of habits. Years of habits. And I just kept centering, and then I kept living in the here and now. And he said, you want to make some raspberry jam? Sure. So he starts to make the raspberry jam, and he's talking about the past, and I'm busy making the raspberry jam. There's nothing in my life I got to do but make raspberry jam. It's all here now. And he's here, and he's telling me the stories, and they're going through me like Chinese food, and I'm doing my mantra, and on it's going. And very quickly, he starts to feel, wow, it's really good to hang out with him. Because it's all right here and now. Right here and now. That was in May. That was just a year ago. From a depressed guy getting ready to die, in February, I gave the bride away for his new marriage. And he's now on his honeymoon. And when he brought his wife to the apartment, he said, Rich, I can't make it by myself. He calls me Rum-Dum. Okay? Beautiful, it's beautiful. He says, I can't make it by myself. Would you help me carry her across the threshold? And now he's on his honeymoon in Scotland, and he's right here and now. I mean, it's all right here and now. He's not living in the past. He's not living in the future. He's right here and now. And that is the exact message. When the guy is washing the windshield, here we are, we're God. This moment is the only moment in the universe. This is it. This is not quick wash the windshield so I can get on to California. This is the moment. I stopped at a Shell station in Vermont, I recall. The guy washed the windshield and I just looked at him, and I was just signing the credit card and looking at him, and nothing. I wasn't saying to him, I am God, you are God, I am love, you are love. Don't you realize you're love, you're not a Shell station attendant. I was just signing the credit card, and we were talking about my old car and how groovy it was and all that kind of stuff, and that was all. And he felt that thing. He felt that thing because A human relationship is as high as the highest link. It's as strong as the strongest link. So if you can get your vibrational frequency up, everything around you comes up to that place because it's all reaching for that place anyway. It'll go through all its quivery doubts, and all you've got to do is keep centering, and then you are creating your universe. And then he said to me, "Say, let me show you my car." So I got out and we went behind the garage and looked at his car. Then he said, "I'd really like my wife to meet you." We went up and met his wife. She said, "Won't you stay for lunch?" So I stayed for lunch. I realized I could move in and live there forever. And there was no reason why I should leave. I mean, how do we define he's a Shell station attendant and I'm just passing through? Who's caught in that drama? Here we are. This is the moment. Now, what is this moment? Here we are. Nobody's going anywhere. The minute you're free of Peyton Place, then everybody around you gets liberated. That's why a guru, the concept of guru is different from the concept of teacher, you understand. Teacher is another person in the melodrama who points the way, says it's out that way. A guru is it. He's pure mirror. There's nobody home. He just shows you where you're not immediately, and he's right there, and it's waiting for you, and it's so warm, and baby, come on in. And he doesn't even say come on in because he doesn't care. Right? But he's right here all the time. And you've got to dig how you can't have one little bit of impurity in your game. You've got to really be right here. I go into the bank in this little town of Franklin, New Hampshire, and I go to the teller at the window, and she'd be this woman about 50, corseted, tight-lipped, New Englander, looking at this guy with a beard, a hippie. And she'd be like, "I'll touch his money, but I won't enjoy it." One of those kind of things, you know? And I'm thinking, you are God. I am God. Here we are again. We've known each other forever, and this time you're the bank teller. And we were lovers, and you've been my mother, and I've been your child, and I've been your teacher, and you've been my God, and we've been here forever, and here we still are. And I can, in her head, if we had this dialogue, it would be, "I'm a bank teller, I'm not God, I'm a bank teller, I'm not God." At the same moment, if my thing is impure, one little bit, if there's one little element in me that's saying, "Come on, baby, be God," it'll never work. I can't be attached to the effort, to the fruits of my actions. I just do it because I do it because I do it because I do it. And if I can do it without attachment, I do not create any paranoia in the other person. And then at the end, as I'm leaving, the corners of her mouth can turn up just ever so slightly because it feels good to her and it feels safe to let it know, let it be feeling good. But the minute there would be one thing in me that would think of her as object, like, "Come on, lady, be in love," it'll be horrible because paranoia takes two to dance. See? You can't be paranoid all by yourself if everybody around you won't be paranoid. Do you ever have somebody in a... I was once in an LSD session of professional pushers. And we were all taking intravenous LSD. And it was very beautiful. And I was very high, and suddenly I felt there was a very funny vibration in the room. And one of the guys was having a rough time. He was a beautiful guy. He was caught. And I went over, and I fell down next to him, and I said, "Well, man, you've caught my skull. What are you going to do with it? I mean, you've taken my head from where it was. You must want it. What do you want to do with it?" And he looked at me, and he says, "I'm going to take my chick and my motorcycle, and I'm going to go home, and I'm going to get my .38 revolver, and I'm going to come here, and I'm going to blow your fucking brains out." With hate in his eye. And I said to him, "Well, man, if you do that, you're going to be killing a really beautiful cat. But if you got to do it, go ahead. But when you're outside, dig these stars, because they're really beautiful. You know, on your way. And I'm with you, but I'm going to stay here because it's warm and all your friends are here and we all love you. But you go ahead and you go get your gun and do your thing. It's all cool." And he went to the door and he looked around and he started to go out and he looked at the stars and he looked back and he looked out and looked back. And then he started to cry and he came back and fell down and broke through. Because nobody was into his drama with him. And you say, well, that's all right, but think of the other cases. It's always impurity. It's always impurity. Buddha's shield that kept Mara, the demon, from screwing up his enlightenment was that purity. It was that purity of not being in subject-object. Karma is subject-object. It's exactly what it is. So you realize your desires create your universe. You calm your head down so you watch attachment go by and don't identify with it and be perfectly centered in here. Om mani padme hum, om mani padme hum, om mani padme. Watching it all go by. And then your statement of being will create the universe that you dream of living in. Your desire will create your universe. Simple as that. Simple as that. The statement you have to give it all up to have it all means you have to have gone beyond compassion to then be compassionate. You have to see that it is all nothing. There is no you, there is no me, there is no one speaking, there is no one listening, there never was. All of these are merely changing forms in the pattern of illusion, but for a brief second here. When you know that and sit here where nothing's happening, then you can be in the world of form and illusion with great compassion and see how it all is. Only then. Only then. Clinging neither to the void nor to compassion. It's the paradox of the two in one. Every time I feel compassionate for our melodrama, I see there's nothing here. And every time I see there's nothing here, I feel infinite compassion. By letting go, it all gets done. The world is won by those who let it go. But when you try and try, the world is then beyond the winning. People say, well, what are you doing? I say, I'm doing what I'm doing. I do what I do. What else is there to do? I am not driving through Iowa in order to get to California, although I am headed towards California. When I am in Iowa, I am in Iowa. And when I'm in California, I'm in California. When I'm here, I'm here. And it's always right here. It's always right here. See, when you do mantra, when you do mantra, you repeat something which finally, one of the techniques is you first hear it out here, like Om Mani Padme Hum. Om Mani Padme Hum means Om, the unmanifest God, or God in his unmanifest form. Mane is a jewel, Padme is the lotus, and Hum is the manifestation or the heart. So it means God is like a jewel or a pure crystal in the heart of the lotus which resides in my heart. Center of the lotus which resides in my heart. So I keep doing Om Mani Padme Hum until I have created a room inside myself, a cave, the Hridayam, the spiritual heart cave. And then I hang out in that cave. And in that cave are groovy people. When I want to manifest them, there's Buddha, there's Christ, Ramana Maharshi, Ramakrishna, Teresa, a lot of groovy people. I hang out with them. And I just stay in that room in my heart and watch it all go by. And at the same moment, I'm doing everything I got to do because it has nothing to do with the external world. I'm going to recite a 16th century, an inscription on a 16th century Norman crucifix, and then I'm going to stop, and those of you that have had enough, because of heat or fatigue or satiation, or because you're trying to hear something, maybe feel you've had enough, feel free to go out as long as you realize that your going and coming is nowhere but where you are. And there's really nowhere you can go. I mean, if here is here, here's going to be here whether you're out on that street, on Gary, or you're in here. And then you get home and you get into bed and we're still here. And you go under the covers where we're still here. I mean, do you realize what it meant to me when I realized that Maharaji knew everything in my head? Do you realize what it means when there's no place to hide? A Sikh phrase says, once you realize that God knows everything, you're free. Because it's only the closed doors in your head that keep you from being free. That's what keeps other people him. The closed doors in your own head. Something to hide. That's why truthfulness is one of the parts of my yoga. That, of course, means I can't carry pot. Because if I carry pot, somebody else is him. It's tricky, see? It's complicated. Give it all up to have it all. So go where you will, but know there is nowhere to go. Because all we will be forever after eternally is here. Is here. And at first when you are here and you see nothing's ever going to happen again, you will feel like you lost something. You lost the exquisite tree of life. Until you begin to see that that's all here too. It's all here. I am the great sun, but you do not see me. I am your husband, but you turn away. I am the captive, but you do not free me. I am the captain. You will not obey. I am the truth, but you will not believe me. I am that city where you will not stay. I am your wife, your child, but you will leave me. I am that God to whom you will not pray. I am your counsel, but you do not hear me. I am your lover, whom you will betray. I am the victor, but you do not cheer me. I am the holy dove that you will slay. I am your life, but
if you will not name me, seal up your soul with tears and never blame me. There will now be a 5-minute break, following which we will be discussing reincarnation, bhakti yoga, and various and other assorted thoughts in my head.